Welcome to Fundamentally Drained Podcast with your hosts, Father Everett Lees, Father Tom Dahlman, and Justin Dixon. Three Christians exploring Christianity from a perspective other than the fundamental view from which we have become fundamentally drained. We'll begin the conversation and you take it from there.
Good morning, Vietnam! This is the Fundamentally Drained Podcast, and we're here this morning with Everett Lees and Justin Dixon and myself, TD Touchdown, Tom Dahlman. And I'd like to begin our podcast this morning first by apologizing to Everett for calling him a racist last time. We get carried away in these discussions.
Now, if we actually played these back in order, then you might know which one it is. But who knows? It'll be like, what? Someone's trying to Ginger's trying to rewind and go find where you called him a racist at.
It was very subtle.
Luckily, out of that, we have created three new podcast ideas. Good comes out of everything.
What to do when your friend stabs you in the back?
in the middle of a podcast.
Topic one.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So, today we are talking about interventionist God. Whew. And exactly. Let the heresies roll.
Is this a God for like AA?
This is what?
Intervention.
I was like, what? Wait, let me get another drink of coffee here. So this was kind of...
Well, I started off, I called Everett a racist and he just made fun of everyone in AA. So I feel like
You're back in the...
I'm back on top. I'm back on top, baby.
You know, we did talk about that because we talked about we need an episode to where we go back and kind of do some apologies or maybe all the people because this is pretty much off the cuff. We just kind of wing it and have fun with it and stuff like that. And we're going to say things that we probably shouldn't have and things like that. So if we ever offend anyone, we apologize. We may come back and do an episode where we point out all of those things we should not have said. So, but today we're talking about an article that was brought up and shared on social media. And I should have printed off the guy's name. Sorry, John, whatever your name is, that wrote this. But it talked about, let me just give you a little bit of what, and I marked a couple of spots to read of this, but says, of course I didn't write this part down. There's a similar refrain I hear from the lips of many Christians these days. Whenever the subject turns to the growing dumpster fire in D.C., and the resulting unrest in our nation, he's saying that people say, relax, God is in control. And so he says the words are designed as a conversation stopper, an ironclad sanctified mic drop, exempting them from further discussion on the matters at hand, and supposedly assuaging all my fears in four simple words, relax, God is in control. So it kind of brought up a discussion that I've been wanting to have with these guys for quite some time about an interventionist God in that, you know, when you go in and someone is sick and you pray for them, what is your expectation there? What's going to happen there? Or if things like this is relaxed, God's in control, or maybe another phrase of, and this is probably putting too much out here, but you know, God won't give you more than you can handle. One of those other phrases like that. So let's just shoot first thoughts out.
there's a tension between a God who is active. We don't have a deistic God who kind of created the world and now sits back from afar and just kind of sees what's going on. But we also don't have a God that's a micromanager and is, you know, we're just simply sort of pawns in a chess game. And so it's somewhere in between those two extremes.
Nice. Okay. TD.
touch. Bring it home.
So the question is, what do we meet? Is God in control? Is that just the question?
Sure. You can use that one.
No, but God could be in control.
Ooh.
There's the answer.
Say more.
You should see the proud look on his face right now.
Well, like in the book of Job, Job goes to the eternal courtroom in heaven, and he says, you know, I haven't done anything to deserve all this. Why did you do this to me? And the answer seems to be, once you sort through the whole book, that God didn't do this to Job, even though you have God giving permission to the Satan to go and do whatever it was that happened to him. You know, all the horrible things. But it seems like the answer is bad stuff happens because chaos is in the world. But occasionally, this answer is not comforting and makes no theological sense. But occasionally, God reaches into the chaos and rides the Leviathan, you know, puts the hook in its nose. The sea represented chaos for the Jewish people. So when he says, have you seen the behemoth? Have you seen the Leviathan? He's saying, can you ride the chaos? Can you bring order to the chaos? But it's not there all the time. Do I know why? No. So I want to say, yes, God is not in control. Chaos is part of our life. Bad things just happen. But sometimes we see God's hand in the midst of the chaos. That's my best answer. I don't know. That doesn't make for a good long conversation, does it?
Okay, so I appreciate your answer. I do. And I'm not going to put a but on that, but because that nullifies everything we've said before. So in regards to, let's take this to a simpler form of, for some reason I want to make this childlike, but I don't know why. Grandma's sick. I want to pray. I want God to heal her. Right? So do we, as Christians, do we believe that if there is prayer, if there is supplication, does God heal on our behalf?
Sometimes.
and so that's where I have a difficult time in saying, why does God seem to intervene into this situation? I mean, there are miracles that occur, healings that occur that are not explainable, other than just to say something miraculous happened.
Right.
And so that begs the question, well, why in this situation but not in this situation? And those are things that we will never understand, and it's sort of it's what makes people atheist. It's because they sit there and they go, you know, if you're such a good God, you know, why did my daughter die?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you act in my life?
Right.
It's a paradox because you've got the free will of humanity versus God's sovereignty. And those two things don't seem to jive because Hitler is free to lead the nation of Germany down the wrong path and bring about the Holocaust and destroy millions of lives. And yet God is sovereign. So I don't know how we reconcile those things.
Explain sovereignty, please.
Well, God is king. The universe was made at God's command, and it will eventually be all brought back to made right again, or brought to rights, as N.T. Wright would say. You know, it'll be put back together eventually. But we're free. We're still free to hurt each other.
Right.
Nature is still free to respond to the rest of nature.
or neglect.
Or neglect, yeah.
The Orthodox tradition would say that that hell is a making of our own choosing.
Mm.
They differ from the Western tradition, which has tended to say that, you know, hell is a place of judgment for those who are bad.
Right.
The Orthodox sort of deny the possibility of hell, other than it's something that we create for ourselves. But wherever you fall in that spectrum, as someone told me recently, God will let you go to hell if you want to.
Right. We hold the keys to the door out of hell. I think I messed that up, but the yeah, that sounded right. I think if we're in hell, we're the ones who hold the keys to get out. Something to that effect. Now, that does not work in third world theology.
What do you mean?
There are hells on earth that people don't have the keys to get out of.
Ooh, yeah.
That's so good. It's the guys from Inglorious Pastards podcast.
You gotta be real careful when you say that.
Podcast.
Well, no, you say don't. This is an Episcopalian podcast.
Yeah, right?
You can say whatever you want.
They threw that out there on one of their first couple of episodes and said, if your theology does not work in third world, then it does not work. So that's another thought, because I'm pretty sure that a lot of people that are dealing with atrocities didn't say, you know what? If I just use these keys.
There goes Ron Bell's thoughts.
Ah, you said that before about love wins. yeah, I remember.
So, here's the other tough thing to reconcile. I think this works in a third world theology.
Okay.
Not everything that happens is God's will. You know, like we used to say growing up, evangelical.
Everything, world, right.
Everything that happens is God, you know, God will bring it all. But that's not true. I don't think the Holocaust was God's will, or
right.
that somebody would drive drunk and hit somebody, you know, kill some kid. That's not God's will. But then when those things happen, I think not in a way that makes it okay that it happened, not in a way that brings, that makes us say, we're glad that terrible thing happened. But somehow God can bring redemption or redeeming value somehow, some redeeming value. I don't know how, but by faith we see God's hand when we go through those things.
So when Paul says that that God is bringing good through all things, what's the exact quote? Come on. But anyways, one person reflecting on that passage says that what it means is that even the worst that we do is not an obstacle to God's ability to do good. And so the passage is not that everything is a result of God's action, but rather that God is able to act even in the midst of the worst things that we can do. And the resurrection of Jesus is a prime example of that. I mean, that's, you know, the crucifixion of Christ is one of the worst things that we could do to a human being, and yet God is able to work, you know, you know, through that. It's good.
Amen.
I have problems with Katrina, and
yeah, I hate her. Never mind.
And how that was flaunted within our faith, that it was punishment from the ogre god who sits on the throne and sends down lightning bolts because insert whatever there, I don't remember what was said exactly, because of sin within that region, New Orleans, I don't know exactly what was said exactly, to the point of like, well, that was, you know, their fault. Kind of thing, or that the flood that happened in New York, so there have been very prominent Christian leaders who have gone on medias and said, oh, well, that was because of this and that was because of that.
The hurricane in Haiti, Pat Robertson said it's because they practice voodoo.
Yeah. Yeah. I got a pretty big problem with that. Yeah. And, you know, that's... is an interventionist God, But you know what? When you read the Old Testament in a specific way, you see that God. You can read that God into it if you don't have, I don't want to say understanding, but see, I'm drowning now.
So I'm going to throw out a book here.
Thanks.
David Bentley Hart, his book, The Doors of the Sea, Where Was God in the Tsunami? He wrote this after the tsunami that hit Southeast Asia, in which he talks about, one, the question of if there really was a God, then this would not happen. And he kind of refutes that argument. And the next one is then how could God allow bad things to happen? And he provides a theological construct for, you know, how evil can exist in the midst of a God-created world. And it's a phenomenal book.
What was the name of it?
The Doors of the Sea, Where Was God in the Tsunami?
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
It's like Philip Yancey's.
The Problem with Evil?
He did Where Is God When It Hurts or something. He's done a couple of variations of that, and they're all pretty good, but they go back to crucifixion, as you mentioned earlier, that, you know, God has suffered the worst with us, you know, in human form. Tom?
Yes, sir.
Were you going to say something? You look ready over there.
Well, I was just thinking, I wanted to, since we're all throwing out book names.
Oh.
Evil and the Justice of God by N.T. Wright.
Yeah.
That's a great book,
that's
too.
That's a good one.
But maybe a good example. This is an example that there's an article on Red Letter Christians by Tanya Harris, and she says she's talking about what if God is in control, and she makes the point about God isn't in control when somebody, you know, goes down the wrong path for a long period of time and then their life starts to feel the implications of their sins. But God can take that, she says, that fumbling, bumbling man and turn him into, you know, use that fumbling and bumbling and turn that pain into, God can turn that man into, you know, light and salt. So, which she didn't say light and salt. That was me, so. Yeah. So I think that's an example of if God can do it in our life, it takes faith to walk through life and not give up. But we see all this stuff. I had a loved one in our family recently pass away. And I remember, and then there's another situation in our church here where we had a guy on a vent. The doctors are saying he's brain dead, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No hope. It's gonna, if he survives, he'll just be a vegetable kind of a thing. 2 days later, I walk into his room, the vent's out, and I walk in, he says, "Hey Tom, how's it going?" And he's making Swedish jokes with me because he's from Minnesota, like my grandparents. Anyway, so I'm thinking about him, and I know about the thousands of people that were praying for that guy, and then as my loved one, not in my immediate family, but close, is dying, I'm thinking about him and just praying and praying and praying, and she doesn't make it. So, I don't know. It's hard.
It is. And yeah. So,
but I do think God intervenes, but not all the time. Why? I don't know.
Yeah, see that? I mean,
that's a sucky answer.
When I sit around and try and reconcile that, and I can't. You know, there is talk of prayers for us. Prayers for us to be able to handle what takes place in this chaotic world. This world of sin, which sin for some is what created all of this. This free will is what introduced everything. Why that? Because of sin. Why that? Because of sin. That's a fundamental answer in a lot of ways.
I thought chaos is better. I mean, sorry for interrupting
you.
No, but yeah, it's not always because of sin. I mean, some of it's just bad. I mean, crap. You know, like chaos.
Yeah,
it's
stuff
just,
happens.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Right.
There's somebody who's, you know, talked about prayer and says that, you know, we tend to think that prayer's purpose is to change God and God's mind.
Mm.
But really what happens in prayer is that we're the ones who are changed. And so, you know, some of that is just, you know, our expectations and it's not wrong. I mean, you know, if my daughter was sick, you know, I would be praying earnestly for her healing. And if it didn't happen, you know, I would be ticked and I'd be really angry. And it's just, it's a normal reaction. But I think that in an effort to make sense of everything, we apply everything good and everything bad, you know, to God's, you know, desires or God's plan, when I really don't believe in sort of the micromanaging God.
Mm.
I mean, that's a sort of a Calvinistic, you know, approach mm-hmm. to God, that the sovereignty of God is so great that everything happens as a result of God's will, and I sort of reject a Calvinistic notion of God.
Could you make the case, I just thought of this, could you say that all evil is the result of sin? I don't buy the Roman Catholic argument of original sin. I think it's more like the Orthodox idea, like we're all impacted by the stain of sin, but not necessarily original sin in the Catholic sense. But that said, I could be wrong, you know? It's happened before, so it could be the Catholic. I mean, in which case they would say, I mean, I know a Catholic priest listening to this might say, well, all death entered the world because of sin, all evil. So you can say that everything that bad that happens is because of sin.
Hmm. So that comes from, okay.
But not in a direct, maybe in an indirect way or with the long view, not the...
Well, and I think just from a pastoral response, you know, sometimes we want to, you know, we want to make sense of everything. And so, you know, somebody's loved one dies and well, oh, well, that was God's will, you know, and it's sort of way of trying to bring meaning or understanding to it. And I think, you know, one of the most powerful, you know, portions of the Bible is when Jesus is on the cross and he cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? That even in that moment, I think as Tony Baker, our theology professor, would say, is that the rubber band that represents the relationship between the Father and the Son has come to the point of stretching to where it's almost broken, but it never really breaks. But you know, where God is in that moment is so hidden that even Jesus asked the question of, where are you?
Ooh, whoa. That was... Thanks, man.
And so,
you finally made our podcast valid today.
I know you guys can't see it, but Everett just dropped a microphone.
That was great. Wow. I can't wait to listen to that again. Go ahead. Would you have more? That was good, man.
Such nerds.
This was church cool, not like cool in the real world.
Yeah. Right, right. It would drop the lapel.
We're all like 400 pounds and playing video games right now. You can't see it, but.
God, that's another one.
Powdered donuts.
That statement's another one for that episode where we have to go back and apologize to somebody. So the back to the prayer piece, unless someone wants to expand on that, what Everett said, that was really good. Prayer as far as being who this is for. Are we honoring God? Yes, in my opinion. Is it something to where we can, you know, release his miracles through supplication, prayer requests, and this and that?
Miracles.
Miracles. So that, there's a, I was, are you eating cereal?
No. Yes. Sorry. Keep going.
So that's great. Wait. Oh, set the bowl down. Oh, sorry. Okay. So someone told me I was speaking about a family I know, and how it just seems like the waves come and the waves don't stop. Just every corner, there's something, 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 something. And I asked, how can I help? Because I don't know what to do. I literally have no idea, you know. And I'm not looking for answers for that now. But I said, you know, what do I do? And he said, well, sometimes when you look into something, it's cloudy, it's foggy, you don't see a direct path. Other times when you look into something, you see exactly what to do, how to do it, and where to go with it. And he said, for that cloudy one, that confusing one, pray. He said, for the other one, pray, and then go do it. And that's how my understanding of what being the incarnate hands and feet come down is like, if you can do something about it, then be Christ now. Be God, Christ, and go and do these things. Pray about it, yes, in honoring and God and stuff like that. And so, but if you can do it, go do it. Be the intervention.
Yeah.
You guys are all quiet.
I think if you... there's a wonderful study that Forward Movement, Scott Gunn and Melody Shobe have put together on the questions that people ask. And one of the questions that they cover is, why do bad things happen? And they go through every possible answer that's given. And at the end of it, what they end up saying is we don't know why bad things happen, but what we do know is that God never departs from us in the midst of the bad stuff. That God is always present. And so, you know, in the end, you know, in the question of why bad things happen, or if you're in, you know, if you're dealing with someone who bad things are happening with, being present is the most godlike thing, rather than trying to make sense of it. Like, well, here, let me tell you exactly why this happened.
Right.
Which is the last thing they probably actually need to hear.
Which is when you talked about being with someone in a pastoral sense of, and they just pass saying, well, you know, God needed another angel, you know, right. Something like that. It's like, don't.
Yeah.
Just say, I don't know, and be present. It's sitting Sheba.
Show up and shut up.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
like that. After the OSU plane crash that killed the basketball players and President Halligan, you know, in his, public mourning at Gallagher IBA, you know, said, well, you know, God needed another cowboy. And I'm like, that's like the worst theology that could apply
right.
to this tragedy.
So your significant other, whatever, died because God wants him. Yeah, I don't.
When I was in a seminary, our pastoral theology professor, Kathleen Russell, would give us, you know, part of her class is training you to not do that stuff, and which we still all do it because we're so uncomfortable with pain and suffering, but. Anyway, she would give you all those statements and, you know, God needed another angel or whatever. So when I was in seminary, I was being really stupid and racing a car. I had my big Great Dane with me and we were running and I tripped and fell and my knee landed on one of those metal garden borders and I cut my leg all the way to the tendon. So I'm out in the middle of this neighborhood. I go into shock. There's no one around. The car I was racing just sped off. Ugh. And I can just feel like this terrible, terrible leg injury. So I'm in shock. I take my shirt off, tie it around my leg as tight as I can to stop the bleeding. And I walk home, limp home. I see some seminary friends because it's right there by the front in front of Lee Elementary. And right behind it, and hey, are you okay? What's going on? I said, no, I'm fine. Put my dog inside, get in my car, drive to the ER.
Oh my gosh.
I'm on the fourth. I can't find a parking place. I had to park on the fourth story of the parking garage. I walk in and I throw my driver's license and insurance card on the nurse's desk and just sit down, and I've still got this shirt tied around my she comes, can I look at your leg? And say, oh my gosh. They run me to the back. Anyway, a few days later, while I'm in the hospital, Kathleen comes in to visit me, and this is the ultimate chance, you know. And she's just talking, listening to me. And finally I said, Kathleen, I think that some angel in heaven just needed some knee skin. And so God decided to take mine.
You did?
It was so great.
Oh, my God.
That's a long buildup for not much return, yeah. Wasn't it? That was. But it was so funny for me. I still get a lot of joy thinking about it. Because she couldn't say anything at that moment. Couldn't rebuke me for my bad theology.
for your bad theology?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Okay, let's come back around to this article.
I had no reaction to that.
Oh, he did when you were first talking about it. So he went on to say that it imagines the relax, God is in control, said it imagines that God engineers outcomes the same way as football scores, right? So if I pray about this, then praying for the Patriots to win the Super Bowl or something like that, that's the whole relax, God is in control. It exonerates people from any culpability for a vote they perhaps now feel is regrettable. In matters of injustice and suffering and evil, it essentially passes the buck to God. So, you know what? It's okay. God's got it. You know, and I feel like that gives, and his kind of point is like that gives people just, whatever. It's okay. I don't care. God's got it. You know, I messed it up, but God's got it now kind of thing. But he went on to say, God is love, God is good, God is powerful, but God is not forceful, and God is not magic. And we're coming to a close here, but I kind of wanted to put that out there. It says, and to close up, he said, because the truth, Christian Fringe, is that God is not in control of you. Okay. You are in control of you, and God is asking you to be goodness and love in a way that tangibly changes the story we all find ourselves in. God is asking you what you're willing to do to bring healing and cease pain and show compassion. Your move. What is this thing? So, final thoughts on that? And I'll put this in the show.
Well, next. I mean, and you know, I think what he's pointing to is that we have free will. So when he says God is not in control of you, meaning that I can choose, right, you know, the decisions that I make. And so I think that's what he's pointing to. I think he's right. I mean, I think we have to own up to our own decisions and sort of the notion of either placing the blame upon God, you know, well, God's got this, God's in control, this is God's will, or on the other side of it where we place the blame on the devil and say, well, the devil made me do
right.
it.
Right.
Much of human experience seems to be denying any culpability in our own decisions.
Nice. Tom?
TD?
I agree 100%.
Touchdown? He's on Facebook and
no,
Instagram over there.
No, I'm not on Facebook. I was looking up a verse.
Did you find it?
No.
There's okay. a real Bible in front of you.
I know, but it's hard to find stuff in the real Bible.
No, don't lie. You know exactly where it's at.
Search engine.
Your skills have got.
Did you want to offer anything?
No, I can't think of anything to offer.
All right. Well, one thing that he did say in this, I assume this is a blog post, but he says, and right now, the ancient words of St. Francis are still the most dangerous prayer we can ever authentically pray. God, make me an instrument of your peace. And, you know, I appreciate that. And so because of that, I thought we would end our episode here with that full prayer from the Book of Common Prayer. It says, Lord, make us instruments of your peace. Where there is hatred, let us sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is discord, union. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. Grant that we may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, and it is in dying that we are born to eternal life. Amen. May the peace of the Lord be always with you.
Thanks for joining us today. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook at FunDrainPod. We'd love to hear your comments on our episodes and also suggest future episode topics. Also, if you enjoy what we're doing, go on to iTunes and give us a review, please. Thanks a lot.